At the end of your life, what will be your legacy? What will you leave behind for future generations? For the world, join the world messenger, Isabella Lundberg. Each week as she brings you a new distinguished guest from the business, sports, or entertainment world to share their success, their struggles, and their lessons. They will share their insights into current hot topics that affect everyone. Isabella facilitates an intimate, vulnerable environment to find the true value of humanity and real leadership. Are you ready for your legacy? The legacy that matters?
If you had opportunity to ask him some really awesome questions from Top Gun consultant, author, futurist, and unashamed lover of AI, what would you ask? Let me tell you the questions we're going to cover in this epic episode of Legacy Leader Show. Hi, it's Isabella Lundberg, and I cannot wait for you guys to get a flavor of everything I had a chance to firsthand experience when I heard my guest speak on one of the interesting topics related to transformation of work, contracting, business, closing the deals, mergers, acquisitions, but just in general, how organizations are going to do the business. Without further ado, let me introduce you to this awesome guest, Adam Bodstrom, who is joining me from New York, one of my favorite cities. Adam, welcome.
Thank you for having me. So much fun to be here.
Thank you. Thank you again for opportunity, because I know in our worlds where we juggle consulting and new technologies and continue to personally grow, right? But in the same time, position companies that we're part of or our clients that we work with from future perspective, what is coming? Do you mind sharing, first of all, how did you become the futurist?
Well, I think the way it goes for all people in their career paths, there was some serendipity, but also it's a combination. You've got the luck of ending up where I did, and I'll speak about that in a second, but then there's also just who you are. I've always been a futurist. I've always found cutting edge technologies and societal changes and geopolitical trends. I've just always found those really interesting. I've always spent a lot of time reading, writing, and thinking about the future. So it was always there. But the real push was that I was fortunate enough when I joined TCS, the company I'm currently with. It's an IT consulting firm out of India with 600,000 employees, one of the world's largest companies. They had a group there, a team called the Future of Business Team. And by being on that team, I was a strategic foresight consultant, but I also worked with a lot of futurists, and it's enabled me to become a futurist. And I love it. I hope I can do it for a long time.
That's fantastic. For everybody that's not familiar with Adam is mentioning, he's working for Tata Consultancy that has such a strong presence. And it's so great to hear that he's the part of also transformation that is going on right now. And I have to say, I'm a little bit jealous, Adam. You grew up in one of my favorite cities, actually, beside New York, and you had a chance to work in one of my other favorite cities. So you covered three major cities that are east, west, and middle of the country. So do you mind sharing a little bit about your upbringing in Chicago and how this influenced for you to get a flavor from Chicago, then San Francisco, and now New York, to really see what's going on in these innovative hubs and transformation that is occurring?
Sure. It's funny. Again, it was never really a plan when I was young, like I'm going to live these places. Although I'm going to get really personal here. There was that Baz Luhrmann song from like 25 years ago, where one of the lyrics is, live in California once, but leave before it makes you soft. Live in New York once, but leave before it makes you hard. I don't know. I just guess I've sort of been embodying that song. Anyway, I love Chicago. Born and raised in Chicago, the closest thing I have to a religion is how I feel about the Chicago Bears sports team. I couldn't not love them if I tried, even when they're terrible. I think I like the trend for this upcoming season. In case anyone wants to talk about the Bears and Caleb Williams. Anyway, Chicago's a great Midwestern hardworking town. The people there are just really nice. Like you hear about Midwest nice and you see it firsthand. And there's this real sense the winters are terrible. There's this real sense of people feeling they need to band together. Like we're all in this together against the cold wind coming off of Lake Michigan. So I was happy to live there, but I was excited to see other parts of the world. I was fortunate enough to go. I went to the University of Chicago in Chicago for undergrad, and then I was fortunate enough to go to the UC Berkeley in near San Francisco in Berkeley to get my MBA at Haas, and I was really fortunate to see the startup scene there. Berkeley and Stanford, the amount of money that those two schools raise in VC capital, it's incredible. It's a whole different world. And getting that whole entrepreneurial spirit, I like to think I picked up a lot of that, this idea that you can just go off and start a company and here are the steps you would take, and seeing it's just so normalized out there. Whereas in the Midwest, it feels kind of impossible. Like, I'm not going to start a company. But in California, not only am I going to, everyone else I know already did. So that was nice. And of course, the natural beauty out there is incredible. And then I've always wanted to live in New York also. When I joined TCS, they told me to relocate to New York. So I said, all right, let's go. Let's have another adventure. And New York's incredible too. I live in Manhattan. I live in the Upper West Side near Central Park. I go to
Oh,
Central Park multiple
that's
times
amazing.
every week. This is just a runner's mecca. I'm not a good runner, but I am a regular runner. And
Bet
to get
you good walker.
so to get the full New York experience, being able to walk everywhere. And it's funny how different it is. When I first came here from California, I know this is not what listeners tuned in to listen to, but I'm going to tell this story anyway, and you can cut it out if you want. When
Please.
I first got to New York, so in California, if you go to the grocery store, boy, when you get to the register, the cashier will say, "Did you have a holistic shopping experience today? Did you find everything you wanted?" Like, you have to have this really warm, positive. I say have to because I hate small talk. This warm, positive interaction with the people you interact with. And then you get to New York and you take your milk up to the counter and the person glares at you and you like roll your lip up at them and then you pay for your milk and leave. And it's just this completely like genuine. We neither one of us have time for this. It's a total different kind of feel, but I kind of enjoy it. So maybe I was always a New Yorker. I don't know. Maybe I'll live somewhere else soon.
But that's great because one thing when obviously you and I got started talking, I was like, I really appreciate the directness and no BS approach from New Yorkers, specifically when it comes to business, right? Like, no nonsense. Let's get down to the bottom of what's going on, what we're trying to accomplish. And it's just the respect of everybody's time and also opportunity to really get quicker, deeper where we need to be, right? Versus sometimes it's nice to have these kind of laid back, casual things. And I'm here in Colorado and talk about laid back and casual conversations and small talks. But ultimately, when we're driven, when we know that we only have a certain amount of time, time is always of essence. And with that in mind, obviously, it's awesome to see how resilient you are, how easy to adjust to such a different environments. And for everybody that didn't have a chance to experience Chicago or San Francisco or New York, you guys are missing out. So everybody that have opportunity or want to go back, yes, things changed since COVID, we know that, but business changed as well. Mindset of people slightly shifted as well from multiple different factors. We see a lot of changes in consulting arena. We're also seeing a lot of changes. How is the business done? So do you mind a little bit giving us a glimpse of what do you see from consulting arena specifically that is shifting right now?
Saying that. But as far as changes now, what immediately comes to mind, obviously artificial intelligence. It used to be people would ask about it here or there. Now it feels like it's the one certainty in every conversation. You're not going to have, as a consultant, there's not a single conversation that goes on with a client. Not one that doesn't involve artificial intelligence. And clients want to know, should we be using it? How should we be using it? Are our competitors using it? And it's fun because there aren't no straight answers for this yet. The technology is so new, people don't really know how to use it. It's clear to me and to the VCs who are investing tens of billions of dollars into AI all over the world. It's clear to me that there's an enormous potential for these technologies. But what exactly they're going to do and what they're going to be best at, That's still to be determined. So almost all the conversations in consulting are about that now. It's more than a fad, though. We've had fads before. A few years ago, a lot of conversations were about blockchain. I was never a fan of blockchain. It's an append-only database. This is not a new invention. But that was much more of a fad in my mind. That people asked about it and then we just dismissed it. But here, it keeps coming up again and again.
I love actually how you contrast that, and you're right, it's here to stay, or either we like it or not. And just the fact how quickly it was adopted across all industries, across the world, frankly, and everyday life, that either we like it or not, we see now and how we're served, we're seeing how we experience certain things, because up behind there is always that little bit of AI infusion, in some cases a lot. And as a result, we're seeing some shifts, and specifically around how are today are deals being closed, how things are being managed, how things are being looking also from acquisition. Because right now I see a lot of large Fortune 500 companies or some largest global companies acquiring smaller startups that already kind of figure some things out or find some amazing solutions. And I'm curious, what do you see from future standpoint and some of the trends that you also can say, based on your, sense of what is here to stay?
Well, AI is definitely here to stay. I don't have any doubt about that. I think in terms of how deals are being done, I don't work directly in M&A. I want to issue that disclaimer. But that being said, we're going to see AI involved in every part of the deal process. So the talk that you referred to earlier, where you heard me speak, we talked about every step of the deal process, pre-deal target selection, negotiations, due diligence, post-deal integration. And we talked about how AI is going to be used in different ways for every aspect, every part of the deal. Specifically for target selection, I said I envisioned something that, to my knowledge, does not exist yet in its full capacity. But basically, I will be surprised given what AI is really good at. It's really good at taking an enormous amount of data and from that, predicting what comes next. So that's how ChatGPT works. It looks at the total corpus of human literature and starts a sentence. And from that, it says, okay, this is the next token. This is the next token. This is how this sentence will continue. It's just predicting, it's making predictions about what comes next. And M&A deals are a prediction as well, because the goal that you're trying to achieve is you're trying to say, if this company buys this other company, if these two companies merge, will that be successful? Will the new entity or entities be worth more than they were previously? That's a prediction. And the question is just, can you get enough data so that you can start to make accurate predictions? And that's really where the bottleneck is right now, because there's a lot of data about companies that is public. You can get all their accounting figures, you can get some semblance of brand recognition and supply chains and dealer relationships and all the rest that's publicly available. But there's a lot that goes on internally in companies. And so that was part of what I envisioned, this idea of the culture of a company. When it comes to an M&A deal, everyone agrees culture is extremely important. If the cultures of, say, two companies are going to merge, if the cultures don't match, that deal is going to crash. And everyone agrees that it's very important, yet we don't really know at all how to quantify culture. Different people agree on what it is or what it means. And so I was envisioning you could ask an AI this. You could give an AI all this internal data about a company. You could say, let's look at all the messages that are being sent inside the company. Which direction do these messages normally go? Is this a top down or a bottom up, or is it mostly horizontal? Are people in clusters, or do people communicate all over? You can look at sentiment analysis of these messages, emails, text messages. You can see how are people in the company actually talking to one another? Are they mostly talking about business right away? Are they talking about what they did that weekend? I don't really know. There's so many different ways to analyze this data. You can look at what percent of the executives at the company are promoted from within. You can look at what percent of the executives are female. You can look at where people live, whether they're remote, all of these things. And which of these are predictive for culture in the sense of how do we say whether two cultures will mesh well together? I don't know. Nobody knows. Like some of those things may be very important. It may turn out when you look at a bunch of data and ask an AI that the way people message one another, the way they talk to one another, that that's really important. Or it may turn out that the way people are promoted from within is really important. Or it may turn out the number of patents or whatever is really important. Or the review process, or I could list on and on and on. But what's great about AI is that it will look at all this data if it's allowed access to it. And that's the bottleneck right here, because you're going to need a lot of companies to open up data that they're not going to want to, in order to provide the training data, companies are not going to want to share this, but that will remain a bottleneck for only so long, I think. And then because the value of the resulting AI is so great. And then AI will go in and it'll say, all right, looking at all these past mergers, estimating what this culture was, what this culture was, whether these cultures blended well together, it'll start to make predictions. And that's just for culture, obviously, brand recognition and sales and R&D expenditures and every other aspect that you can have on a company. AI will incorporate all that together. And the net result will be, it says, I think that this is an 89% success that this merger will work out. It's never going to be certain. No one can predict the future, but it can say this merger looks much likelier to work out than this other one that maybe you were looking at. And when you have a system like that in place, the real benefit is that the AI can look at thousands of companies, tens of thousands of companies at once, companies you never could have screened before. So say you're a private equity firm and you're looking at acquisition targets. Before you could research a handful, maybe hundreds, it would be hard to go into detail without a lot of analysts on more than that. But now, with one software program, you could look at almost all the companies in the world for which any information about them is available. So I think that's where we're headed. I think AI, I'll be very surprised given what AI is very good at. Again, taking a lot of data and making accurate predictions, I will be very surprised if AI is not used heavily in target selection.
So I love what you share, Adam, and it's so again great way to stretch our mind. And besides these immediate pressures and issues, right? We're seeing so many organizations being pressured to create sustainable environments. So many are contracting right now, letting go of their people because that they feel like that's the way they're going to be able to survive. As things are shifting and moving, what do you feel like the future is going to hold as a futurist, just in general, regardless of AI? What would be some of the advice for you for those leaders that are scratching their head and not sure which directions to head out and what to do?
Well, I think for that's a very general question. I'll try to give the most specific answer I can. What I learned, so I actually when I was in Berkeley, I actually co-founded a company while I was out there and was in the entrepreneurship space for a while. And what is always hammered home is this idea that you should just do one thing really well. You look at Amazon, which sells everything in the world. Well, they didn't always. For a long time, Amazon sold books. That was it. Any book you can get, you could want, they'll sell it to. And when starting a company or when starting a new venture or expanding into a new space, I think that that's something companies should try to keep in mind. AI agnostic. Focus on solving one problem really well for some customer group. And say, these people, it was hard for them to find their books before. Now we're going to make it easy. And to the extent that AI or other futuristic tools can help you with that, great. But don't incorporate tools just for the sake of incorporating them. Focus on the problem you're trying to fix and don't try to fix every problem for every person. You can expand into that. That's later. No one's saying that you can't, just as Amazon did. You're not going to stay necessarily, this venture or business is not going to stay small forever, but your success will come from starting small and doing a little bit really well. So look at the problems that are in front of you and focus on them and try to stay specific and stay local and understand your customers really well and then branch out from there.
It's interesting that customer behaviors are shifting as well, not just because of AI, but just because of what they want, who they wanted to get a service from. It's also a lot of competition. Some areas, a lot of saturation in certain markets. And it's interesting how is also customers in general dictating how we're changing our product and services. And I'm curious, what trends do you see happening now and how they're gonna change the landscape in the future?
I see. So in the futurist community, we talk a lot about the new generations, Gen Z, Gen Alpha. What do they like? How do they interact? Do they go out to restaurants a lot? I feel like anything that I say here, I'm just going to be shamelessly quoting The Economist, which is my favorite publication. They do great research on this, and so anything that I say, I'll be plagiarizing. But I think what we're seeing a lot from customers is a reluctance to go out. Like that's one of the biggest changes that's happened. We had COVID and people stayed home a lot, and then they discovered, well, actually, I kind of like staying home a lot. People are going out to restaurants less, but it's harder to get a reservation because people are going out to work at restaurants even less than that. So there are a lot of jobs that require traveling where people are saying, I don't really want to do that anymore. And there are some experiences. People are still going out, people are still moving, but there's a decrease from pre-pandemic of people leaving the home. This is very impactful for real estate. Corporate real estate is obviously undergoing a major transition. I really don't know what's going to happen with that. That's one of the things I'm most curious about as a futurist and citizen, especially in New York here. You see all the office space, and
Yes.
you wonder, will it be converted into residential space? This is very expensive to make those conversions. It's almost cheaper to build buildings from scratch. So that won't happen, or won't happen soon. And then you also see at the same time that people are going into the office less, corporations are booking resorts and vacations and corporate workshops at hotels even more. So luxury high-end hotel markets are demand is surging and for luxury high-end hotels at the same time that it's decreasing for corporate office space, because there's this shift away from working in the office all the time to now just meeting up with coworkers occasionally. I would expect these trends to continue. I think people in general are, it's again, it's not like night and day, like nobody leaves their home anymore, but people are going out less. If they would have gone out 5 nights before, now they go out three or four. And people are going to the office less. If they went to work 5 days a week, now they're going to go two or three. And I would be surprised if these trends are not enduring, especially as we move in, getting more futurist, the ability to do teleconferencing and virtual reality. A metaverse felt a bit like a flash in the pan when Facebook famously changed their name to Meta and made a big deal about it and spent this enormous amount of money, and then just wind it all down and started saying, no, we're going to make AI instead. And Mark Zuckerberg almost never talks about the metaverse now. But I do think that's going to come back, not in the sense of a centralized space. We're not going to have one place, one meta world that everyone goes to. But in the sense that we can have experiences online, I just don't see any way that that trend doesn't continue, because the quality of the experiences in virtual reality are going to be so impactful, so realistic, and the cost is going to be, even though the headsets and the hardware initially can cost a lot compared to traveling anywhere physically, is so much more expensive. A lot more people can afford to have virtual experiences, and I all these trends of staying home a little bit more. I think that's the number one trend that comes to mind, and I believe that will be an enduring trend.
Great perspective again, and thank you for sharing that, because I know that so many are seeking answers, right? And a lot of times we see different perspectives, and it's great to again hear from your standpoint. And I love that you read Economist. I read quite a bit as well, and it's so interesting too when you think about it. And this is really great point. Who do we trust as a source, right? Who is the leader right now in terms of technology and great news and also in disruption? Who is the leader now in AI space with really trusted tools that we can leverage and utilize, right? And in which cities are truly great hubs for that innovative integration between these startups and venture capitals, access and partnerships, et cetera. Which I, if you don't mind, share a little bit from your perspective, because obviously you've been experimenting with that quite a bit as well.
Well, I'm going to go against what I just said, where I said people are going to seek out virtual experiences. I believe that they will, for the most part. However, I also believe there's just no substitute yet, maybe never will be, for being face to face with another person. It's a totally different experience. Brain scans back this up if you don't feel it yourself, if the obviousness of this answer, if it's not already apparent to you. You can look up studies that show that people's brains respond differently when they're sitting in the presence of another person. We pick up on all these other cues. We're more willing to be vulnerable. There's just a lot that happens in person. And because of this, I think this is why you're seeing the Bay Area in particular, San Francisco, Berkeley, I can't even name all the towns, Redwood City, even now, San Jose. You're seeing a resurgence in the Bay Area. Because of this network effect of having so many people in person, and especially when it comes to VCs deciding whether or not to make an investment, I think that they feel much more confident when they can meet with a person regularly and have that touch point of regular physical real life interaction. And we saw big pushes when COVID happened. There was a big decamping from the Bay Area and from New York to Austin and Miami, and much was made about this, but a lot of that has been unwound in the last 2 or 3 years. And either could be another pandemic, there could be this or that, but I will be surprised if you don't see the traditional, it's sort of like a virtuous feedback loop, winner take all situation. I think in New York, in London, in the Bay Area, you're going to continue to see the majority of innovation, especially tech innovation, take place.
Thank you for bringing that up, because a lot of times, again, if people don't know, if they're not hanging out in the right circle, or if they're not taking action to be also not only virtually but in person, in these different hubs and opportunity to really see what's coming. I'm curious, because again, as a futurist, I'm curious, what do you think is the one of the most exciting thing that is coming that you've seen as a result of all of these positive changes that really is kind of shaping things that impacts positively humanity?
Okay, I got an answer for this. I don't, in my mind, nothing will change humanity more than AI-powered robots. That's my answer. We have AI now, and we're still trying to figure out what's the killer use case for this. We can automate away a lot of white-collar work, and much hullabaloo has been made about how office workers are going to be eliminated, but blue collar workers are safe. I think it's the opposite that will prove to be true in 5 or 10 years, which is not to say that people are going to lose jobs and not be able to get other jobs, because AI is not reliable on its own. I want to be very clear about this. I believe AI will create more jobs than it eliminates. It's just that the jobs will change. Your job will be managing AIs or AI-powered robots instead of doing managing them to do the job you used to do, as opposed to doing it yourself. There will be lots of opportunities there. But that being said, the real economic surplus that is created by having AI do office work pales in comparison to the economic surplus that could be had by having physical labor automated, skilled physical labor. This would free up so much time. If you look at all the things that people really struggle with, or all the biggest issues, one of the biggest issues in the United States today is the cost of housing, because it's very expensive to build new homes. A lot of this has to do with, I'm blanking on the word, that thing where the government says what you can build here or not. And a lot of times, a lot of times governments say you're not allowed to build houses here. However, a lot of it also comes from the cost of labor. And imagine if we can have a 3D printer and a team of AI-enabled robots, and there are many robot companies working right now. They make great videos that you can go and watch if you want to see their little teasers. A lot of people have seen Boston Dynamics. I think the Figure One was even more impressive if people have seen that. In that video, a robot is standing in a kitchen and the human comes up and says, "Hand me something healthy to eat." And the robot looks at the table and says, "Here's an apple." And then the human says, "All right, finish doing the dishes." And the robot cleans a plate and sets it in the drying rack. And you can see sort of what's possible. It's still slow and awkward, and I'm not saying we're there yet. But if you had a team of robots, you could build houses day and night. It would cost almost nothing. And it's not just housing. So many of the things that create economic surplus are physical investments. So when we talk about the energy transition to green energy, this requires a huge investment in new green infrastructure. That's a lot of construction projects, and there are not, like, all the construction workers we have right now will all keep their jobs, and we'll add 1 million robots or 10 million, because that's how much needs to be built. And through this, we can completely transform the energy grid and make housing affordable for everyone, and create other third spaces that people enjoy being in. I try not to be too naive about technology or AI. It has faults. It's not perfect. It can't be trusted. But I can't help but feel optimistic when I imagine the utopic possibilities. So that's the world I hope we're lucky enough to live in. But there's your answer. I think AI powered robots will transform the world.
I love that. And I just love, just as you were talking, I could just visualize that, and it feels so amazing, exactly for all of those reasons, because, like, what materials can be used, leveraged, and then also how can we create a much more easy access to others to obtain their dream of having a home, or having specially customized home, or whatever might be the case, but also find a much easier point of entry, as you pointed out, where is developed, as well as price tag that goes and is associated with that. Because we're growing, right? We have now over 8 billion people on the planet, and US is changing environmentally, and also economically, as well as so many other parts of the world. So it's really interesting to see. And I can't wait to experience something like that. But with all of this, Adam, I'm just curious, if you don't mind, then share with the audience, what is in your bucket list? Obviously, you're the futurist, you're that unashamed of AI. You have been authoring an amazing book, that's the fiction, and I'm sure it's probably somewhere coming. But I'm also curious, obviously, as a consultant and having these creative ways to explore, what is in the bucket list for you?
Professionally, I'd like to continue being invited to events like this, like your wonderful podcast. I'm happy to speak on here and talk about these topics that I find very interesting. And I guess I can't think of a single event. I just hope I get to continue doing this work. Creatively, I am working on a second novel.
Yay.
I'm not here to push it or anything, so I won't even say what the title is because it's not published yet. But I hope to finish it this year, early next year, and I'm going to be very excited when that's done.
That's
I the funny thing about me and writing novels, it's not even like it's not something I set out to do. Like I feel compelled to do it. I'm not trying to be pretentious. Like I feel like I have to, like I don't have a choice.
awesome, but I just love that how you leverage in your own personal life creativity and how multifaceted you are, and in order to be the great futurist, or in order to be great consultant, or be able to know what's coming, it just requires also stepping out of comfort zone and do something you've never done before. And so many people shy away and they just continue to do same old, right? And as a result, we're seeing how that can backfire. But speaking of that, obviously you obviously leading and living your legacy. What you already accomplished and what your footprint is shaping it up. I'm curious, what would you like your legacy to be? What would you like you be known for or remembered by?
An original thinker. So I the this next book that I'm working on, again, I wasn't planning to talk about it a lot, but you asked me about my legacy. Like I this book it's complicated, it's set in the future, but it tells stories from the past. And I think that the what it combines, the sense of futurism, but also literary history, I think that there aren't a lot of people who could have written it. I would like my legacy to be an author and a thinker who was able to combine these different aspects of humanity and creativity. I worry this is not going to apply at all to your business audience, but that's what I care more about my creative legacy than my professional legacy, because life's too short. You talk about people sitting on their dreams. I worked for a long time, for 10 years actually. I worked in finance. I was a fixed income trader. I worked long hours. I made a good amount of money doing it, but it wasn't fulfilling. It just wasn't what I wanted to do. And for some reason, this is what I want to do. And I don't know. I think when you get older, you just realize what it is, who you are, and what you like doing. And even if people say it's silly, you don't really care.
You might be, that's fantastic. And you actually might be surprised how many people arrive at the same conclusion and that they realize that it's not just who they are, the persona of being CEO or leading large teams, or as you pointed out, acquiring great deals or making phenomenal money. On the other contrary, if that fulfills you, great, but it's also more to you, more to everybody else. And a lot of times people always think, oh, it's down the road, or I'll have a time, or they will never act on those calls that they feel like within that they wanted to pursue. And this is such a perfect time to say, when all this is shifting, it's so more to it for one person than that just title or that the traditional way of, making money or whatever might be the case. So I really want to just say again, kudo you for sharing that, but in the same time showing what is possible, that we are multifaceted and we should tap in our creativity. And with that in closing, if you can just tell audience one last, I guess, either piece of advice for someone who we loved this very holistically and continue to do that. But with everything that is going on, specifically for the leaders and decision makers, what would you recommend them? Just in essence, how they're leading, and then also in essence, how they're dealing with all the transformative things that we talked about, ranging from AI and everything else in between.
There are a lot of things I could say. What I want to say is never stop learning. That's what matters the most. The transformations are not gonna stop. AI is currently at a little bit of a plateau in ability, it seems. The frontier models that have been created in the last year are not that much greater than the ones that were created 2 years prior. But there are going to be new breakthroughs happening regularly. So all you can do is read about it and play with it. Like, what's great about AI is that everyone can play with it. Like, it's not this secret technology that you hear about. It's right on your computer, and you can start interacting with the AIs, the best AIs in the world, for almost nothing. And that's incredible. How lucky are we to be alive in a time like that? But I encourage people to experiment, to play around, to never stop learning about what the capabilities are, and to not feel intimidated by AI, because I want to assure you, I've spent time with a lot of really smart people. They don't know what these technologies can do either. Nobody knows because they're so new. And you're just as likely to discover some capability that they have that no one else has seen. And more importantly, understand that these AI as it currently exists is not a threat. It's a tool that enables anybody to learn faster and achieve more than they could have without it. It's an ultimate assistant. And what matters in the future is not whether you went to computer science and know some obscure C++ language. It's about, do you have a vision for what the product you want to create, the customer you want to serve, the problem you want to solve? That vision is the most important thing, because that's the thing that can't come from an AI. When you start a conversation with these, every conversation with an AI starts with a blank text box where you input the direction you want to go. That input does not, that initial direction, that vision does not come from the AI. It comes from you. That's what the humans can provide, and for the foreseeable future will provide. So I encourage people to embrace all the new tools. Right now, AI is the main one, but there will be others. Embrace all the new tools as they come about, and build the world you want to live in.
Love that. That is such a great message. And in closing, Adam, if they want to get a hold of you, where people can reach you and discover more or learn more.
I don't have a website or anything fancy like that. Probably LinkedIn. LinkedIn is the safest bet. At my name. Do you want me to spell it out? Adam
That's
Boostrom on LinkedIn.
fantastic. Adam, this was absolutely phenomenal. Thank you for your time. We definitely will have you down the road again, because things will be changing, and we definitely wanted to have the update. But again, thank you so much for the opportunity to speak with you today.
It was a pleasure. Thank you, Isabella.
Thank you for listening to Legacy Leader Show. If you enjoyed the content and had a positive experience, then please leave us a positive rating. In addition, leave us a positive review whenever you are listening on whatever platform there might be. Make sure your friends and family also know about the benefit and value that we provide and what we have to offer. Cheers.